We're on page number 550. In the second para, the root text then says, mount these two on the energy winds. In other words, when you have mastered this giving and taking visualization a little, combine giving with breathing out and taking with breathing in. Then reading from next para, converting unfortunate circumstances into a path to enlightenment. These degenerate times can be most beneficial. When a practitioner meets with many hindrances and is unable to rid himself of them, he ought to be able to turn such unfavorable circumstances into favorable ones. If he does not do so, he will give up Dharma in the face of both favorable and unfavorable conditions. Some Dharma practitioners become arrogant when they are promoted and so on, and then give up the Dharma. Some acquire a little wealth and then give up the Dharma in order to maintain their income. Some despair when faced with unfavorable conditions and then give up the Dharma. When such things happen, it is difficult to practice Dharma. So this may be the conditions, but the ultimate or the primary causes should be the karma. Continue reading from page number 551. Nothing could be worse than slavishly protecting a little Dharma and then giving it up. That is why it is necessary to be able to turn unfavorable circumstances into the path and into something that will not harm the Dharma. These are two subheadings, converting through thought and through actions. The first is two further subheadings, converting them through analysis and by means of the view. It says in the Guru Puja, when the universe is completely filled with the fruits of sin, and our root text on mind training similarly says, when the universe is full of sin, turn these unfortunate conditions into the path to enlightenment. That is at present, whenever the disagreeable occurs, like illness, enemies, spirits, etc., we put the blame on others. Because we do not understand that all sickness is the outcome of our karma, we claim that it is due to food, evil spirits, and so on. However, when we look into the thing or root to be blamed, we find that everything undesirable comes through karma, just as I am taught in the cause and effect section of the small scope. And even that karma came about through our self-cherishing, so self-cherishing is fundamentally to blame. When a thief robs you of your valuables, do not blame the thief. Blame instead your evil karma and the thing that made you develop such karma by self-cherishing. Thus, whenever you are faced with sickness, suffering, unfavorable circumstances, etc., you must think how this helps you to achieve enlightenment. As was said, sickness, sins, and obscurations are a broom. That is, whenever you fall sick and so on, feel that this evil karma, these sins and obscurations, the results of which you would normally be obliged to experience in the lower realms, have ripened instead while you are still in this present rebirth. This should make you feel very happy. Further, you should be glad and feel, I have already been practicing giving and taking by taking on the sins and obscurations of sentient beings. Now I have actually managed to achieve this. Pray that the rest of your suffering may ripen on you and imagine in your meditation that this successfully relieves sentient beings of all the suffering they would otherwise have experienced for themselves. Reading from page 553. As it says, in engaging in the deeds of bodhisattvas, the good quality of suffering is that it removes arrogance through sorrow. One develops compassion for the beings in samsara, avoids sin, and rejoices in virtue. When faced with suffering, you become unhappy, and this removes pride. You also feel compassion for others by reason of your own suffering, and you will want to abandon its causes. When suffering does not come our way, we feel that things are going well and are happy. We should not be like this, for it is said, "Do not be glad when happy, rejoice when sad." Happiness uses up accumulated merit. Unhappiness purifies sin and obscurations. I'm not able to recollect the verse. I think it's a sign of my aging. His Holiness was referring to a quotation here, and he feels that it is the writing of Zabedul Rinpoche. And Zabedul Rinpoche has written a few verses, and I also received the transmission from him, which is those verses were wonderful. Reading from page 554, converting circumstances through the view. Our present text says, regard all deceptive appearances as being the four kayas. So, Rinpoche, so your legs are not fine, but you have a lot of job to do here. However, such a statement follows the old style of explanation from the first dissemination of the teachings, and on examination we find it to be a little unsatisfactory. When we look into the nature of any suffering that has arisen, we are told it is in the first place Dharmakaya, because it is not produced from anything and so forth. But I feel this misses the main point. To be brief, our happiness and suffering may have arisen from either good or bad circumstances. But when we examine their nature, these things are found to have arisen out of a mere set of causes, conditions, and mutual interdependence. When the distorted mind arises, so, of course, the nature of the distorted mind itself is a wrong perception, and also the object to which the wrong perception arises is also a kind of illusion. And we can take those into as a means to think about our own consciousness, which as a means or as a seat to produce the four enlightened bodies of Buddha. Continue reading from page 554. Thus, good or bad circumstances, suffering or happiness are all merely labels, and such things cannot be established by way of their nature. Jizumila has a saying in his experiential song. And in terms of the ultimate reality, then we cannot even locate the past Buddhas. And everything exists in terms of illusion. So this helps us that no phenomenon exists by its own ultimate reality. But in our normal day-to-day life, all the things exist by in a conventional way. And when we refer to the frightening or the fear, it is it is based on the self-cherishing. And also, the fear is also generated or arisen through the conceptual mind, which also give rise to the attachment and desire. And all the afflicted emotions which are related to or which arise out of the conceptual thoughts and the which look at the object as misconstructed, So when we meditate on the emptiness, so such kind of the wrong perceptions and conceptual thoughts are affected. And also if we think in this way, then of course the thought cherishing other is also similar. The self, the other, is also to not have its own reality. And the wisdom realizing emptiness actually affect the mind which grabs the self as inherent existence, but not the other way around. So therefore, there is a great distinction between these two cherishings. If you do not understand the view, you must think, when I die, all the happiness or sadness I may now have will only remain as memories, as if I had dreamed then. It is meaningless to be attached or to be hostile in this short life. Reading from page 556, day 19. Kyabjin Pabong Rinpoche gave a short talk to set our motivations. For his text, he took the prayer of Maitreya, in which it says, I prostrate to bodhicitta, which blocks the paths leading to lower realms, which teaches well the path leading to upper realms, which guides the way to the deadless and ageless. Then he restated the above headings and reviewed the actual contemplation on the interchange of self and others, and with these servings as the basis, the way to meditate on giving and taking. He also went back over the first two parts of his seven-part teaching. So His Holiness is commenting about the special way to meditate on the seven-point cause and effect. The first, meditating on all the sentient beings, generating a sense of equanimity towards all sentient beings. Then next, the first one, looking at all sentient beings as one's mother, then remembering their kindness. And when you remember the kindness, of course, the one first started with your mother or the near ones who have been very kind to you, and then gradually spread your object to the other sentient beings and also include your enemies, where the enemy is held as one of your real masters to develop compassion. Then onwards it moves to the remembering and repaying the kindness and so on. Reading from page 557, begin by contemplating these four. First, equanimity, recognition that all sentient beings were your mothers. Second, third, both ordinary and special ways of recollecting their kindness. And four, the wish to repay their kindness. They are followed by the equanimity, the equality that exists between self and others. Contemplating the manifold faults resulting from self-cherishing, contemplating the manifold good qualities resulting from cherishing others. Now comes the actual contemplation on the interchange of self and others. Taking involving a visualization that will build up your compassion, giving involving a visualization to build up the love that wishes others happiness, one of the two types of love. And at the end of all this comes the development of altruism. When you examine whether you have in fact managed, and one of the main causes or seeds to become the resultant state of Buddha, and I used to recite this phrase, that enthused by the great compassion, I prostrate to Buddha. So this verse from the Nagarjuna's wisdom, fundamental of wisdom. And I changed the little bit of the four line. Instead of saying I prostrate to Gautama Buddha, I changed the line and say, may I be blessed by the Gautama Buddha. Then for the third time, when I read the verse again, and when you did for the third time, then a similar from the which you are in the form of your Vajra master. From it appear another similar different one and dissolve into you. So I think in this way you can change the some lines of the text and do it in your prayer. It can be applied similar to all the seven limb practice, including the prostration and confession and so on. When you examine whether you have in fact managed to do any giving and taking, you will find that it has only been a visualization. You have not at present actually achieved anything substantial for the sake of other beings. Now feel, I shall do something to actually bring this about, and by shouldering this responsibility, you will develop altruism. Then for the above reasons comes developing the actual wish to achieve full enlightenment. These 11 meditation topics constitute a synthesis of both the sevenfold cause and effect instruction and the interchange of self and others. This is how it should be practiced. At the conclusion of the sequence, there is another step, an auspicious gesture to facilitate your complete success. All these presentations are really what we practice in our daily life. All the sufferings that we have as human beings are more towards our mental suffering. And as I expressed before, for the animals, the sufferings are more related to their five senses and due to the conditions for the mostly external factors. And for the human beings, due to the way we think and due to the way of our thinking, so if we are able to bring a change to our thoughts and the way we think in our daily life, the mental suffering and always always the problems, most of the mental problems that we have can be pacified. And we're reading from page 559. If something can be put right, why be unhappy? If a thing cannot be put right, what good is being unhappy? And His Holiness comments with respect to this verse that Ling Rinpoche used to recite this verse. Continue reading from page 559. If you are plagued by suffering, it is quite useless to be unhappy. You should turn this into something helpful. Moreover, you can see for yourselves that there are people who have gained insight into impermanence on their own after nearly dying from an illness or whatever, despite their never having studied such things as the limram. Thus, when beset by bad circumstances, think, whatever happens to me is all right. May the things to which all sentient beings fall victim descend on me. Nothing could be more beneficial than thinking in this way. Kyabje Pamongo Rinpoche then gave us another review of the heading, Converting Unfavorable Conditions into the Path to Enlightenment. So the best way to satisfy all the sentient beings is to work towards eliminating their sufferings. Next is converting such conditions through action. There are four types of action involved here: amassing the two collections, purifying obscurations, giving ritual cakes to the elementals, and invoking the good folks of the Dharma protectors. If you are thoroughly familiar with this mind training, you chance to fall ill, you should invoke the good works of Dharma protectors as follows. My practice of giving and taking has gained new meaning because the suffering of all sentient beings is now ripening on me. May my sickness be even worse than it is already. May you offer ritual cakes to the elementals. Think thus. You have been most kind to me, for you have harmed me. This has proved advantageous for my practice. I have purified my sins and obscurations and have built up my collections even further. Now do me even more harm than ever before. So if you are not able to practice much, as soon as you get up in the morning, as for myself, I remember and recite the verse from Nagarjuna's Fundamental Wisdom, Enthused by Compassion and so on. and also created and shaped your motivation in such a way that you will live a life in such a way which is in accordance to the intention of Buddha. And if someone has to write a very complex drawings, then the planning or the patterns of those lines have to be planned before. So similarly, those patterns of the lines have to be planned in early morning and followed by your shaping motivation and so on. In this way, you can live a very meaningful day. Reading from page 560, teaching a practice to be applied to your whole life. First, there are five powers: the power of white seed, the power of familiarity, determination, repetition, and power of prayer. The first is the most important of these powers. As soon as you wake up in the morning, you must forcefully make this resolution: I shall not let my life become meaningless in general, and I must especially not let this happen this year and even more not today. I shall do something meaningful. I shall subdue my self-cherishing, my true enemy. Your determination initiates all your actions, making them virtuous or non-virtuous, Mahayana or Hinayana. When you are determined to kill a loose or to prepare for your lunch, then that is what you will in fact do. By the time we have got up each morning and put on our belt, we have determined to make the things of this life, things like food, fashion, fame, the means of our happiness. Instead, as you note of your belt in the morning, remind yourself to make the formal resolution and meet it from the very depth of your heart. The power of the white seed means building up your two collections and purifying your obscurations by means of preliminary rites and so forth. These are done to increase your bodhicitta. The virtue we perform normally is misdirected to this life, and it is vital not to let this happen. The power of familiarity means practicing all the time, no matter what we may be doing, walking, sleeping or sitting, by using methods that increase both types of bodhicitta. The thoughts of Mahatma Bodhisattvas are beyond us, as are their deeds, such as sacrificing one's head, arms and legs. Yet these are the result of familiarity. We may at first not know how to do metalwork or carpentry, but we can come to understand these things, and they will no longer prove difficult for us. Similarly, sacrificing our lives would be easier than giving away a dish of greens when we have gained some familiarity with giving our lives. It is said nothing does not become easier through familiarity. Some great beings of the past could do a complete retrospection meditating on the lamrim while mounting a horse. They did this as they put one foot in the stirrup and the other over the saddle before it too went into the stirrup. This is also a result of familiarity. Meditation and familiarity are synonymous. How could it be easy for us to even drink tea out of a full bowl where we're not already familiar with doing this? The next is the power of repetition. It is as follows: at present, self-cherishing is the only thing you develop, and you should stop doing this. You must refute self-cherishing, striking out at it whenever it shows its face, just as you will hit a thriving dog. Next is the power of prayer, is dedicating just before you go to sleep. The root virtues you have acquired that day so that they serve to increase your two types of bodhicitta. These five powers apply to this life. There are also five powers at death. They are a mind training transference practice. Reading from page 562, there are some people who, due to powerful attachment, cannot die when they should. An old monk from Amdo was attached to fat in his food and tea, and so was having a hard time dying. Gongtang Chambeyang used its skillful means and said, "Make a wish to go to Tushi the Pure Land. The fat there will be even better than the fat we get during the holy festivals in the 11th month of each year." The monk immediately breathed his last. And there are different kinds of the self-engaging rituals. And there's also one written by Khonsa Dorje Chang, which is a very concise self-generation rituals. And there's one addition for the Khonsa Rinpoche's one is generating the all-encompassing mind. Reading from page 562, second last para. The power of prayer is not praying to go to pure lands, etc. Instead, you make prayers that will aid in the development of bodhicitta and pray that suffering, sins and obscurations of all sentient beings may ripen on you. The power of familiarity is as follows. Having always familiarized yourself with bodhicitta, we can find that Gendun Drupa, the first Dalai Lama, when he became aged, and he used to say that I'm very old now, and at that time, and his disciples, I think the Panchen Lamas, and who are really the great scholars in terms of the scholastic academic studies. And they told Rinpoche that, of course, Rinpoche, you due to your past lives and the virtuous karmics, there are clear signs that you will be born to the pure land. Then the Jawa Yendun Trubha explains that, I have no wish to be born to the pure land. And I wanted to be reborn to such a place where there are people and the sentient beings suffering. And I always wish to be reborn in such a place and to be able to benefit them as much as possible. So these are really the practice and the prayers of the great bodhisattvas. And Jawa Yendun Trubha has also stated in one of his writings that may I not be ever willing to do anything for myself, but in order to benefit for other peoples, may I attain the clairvoyance and also fluent speech and so on. Page number 563. You should adopt the position of lying on your right side in the lion-like sleeping posture while transferring your mind to its new rebirth. This is how our compassionate teacher entered Nirvana, and doing even just this make a big difference in helping you to reach the pure lands. In general, people should perform the transference by taking refuge according to the small scope. However, someone practicing the great scope must do the transference and the like while in meditation on bodhicitta. You may think this latter method is no way to reach the pure lands, but this is definitely not the case. When Chekhov was dying, he told his attendant to quickly make offerings. I pray to go to hell without respite for the sake of all sentient beings. He said, but this is not going to happen. I am having visions of the pure lands. This is also a similar story about Gishi Potowa. A mother and her child were both swept away by a river. They developed kind thoughts towards each other, and both were born in Tushida. Once the leather coracle that served as ferry at Jasa in the south was overloaded and about to sink. A messenger developed kindness and so jumped into the river. A rainbow appeared until he died. Bodhicitta is a superior form of kind-heartedness. Thus, if you activate even a contrived form of bodhicitta, there can be no doubt that you will be born in a favorable state. We attach more importance to the mind transference practices that employ the mantras free and part than to bodhicitta. We place far too much importance on receiving the signs of accomplishment of such practices. If you practice saying hik many times without doing any visualization whatsoever, the signs of having gained the ability to transfer the mind may manifest. themselves on the crown of your head. But this is merely the action of the energy winds and not anything to be marveled at. This mind-training form of directing rebirth does not involve hike or fart. Yet it is the most profound of all mind-transparent practices. Reading from page 564, the criteria of having trained the mind. All dharma comes within one thought. The Bhagavan gave a vast number of individual teachings, of all of which boiled down to being antidotes to self-cherishing. The fine dividing line between what is dharma and what is not is said to be whether a thing is an antidote to delusion. Thus, the best sign of accomplishment is how much you have reduced your delusions. If you have not managed to do this, other signs of accomplishment do not mean a thing. Even vultures and so on can fly in the air, even mice can burrow underground, and even fish can glide through water. They say you should test whether a thing is dharma by using its mind training as your set of scales. Uphold the chip of two witnesses. There are two witnesses, yourself and others. Your practice may be far from perfect, but you can give the impression that it is. Others may take you at face value and respect your seemingly pure ethics. There are said to be four states of ripeness for mangoes. These have to do with the ripeness or lack of it on the inside and outside of the fruit. You could be like the mango that is ripe externally but green inside. In this case, your moments will be as studied as a cunning cat stalking its prey, and you would be thought a good person by people who know no other dharma. Do not act like this. Also, do not be ripe inside and green outside. Next is always cultivate mental happiness. And the next is you have mastered it if you are capable while distracted. Reading from page 565. The less experienced rider is not thrown by his horse if he keeps his mind on the job, but when his mind wanders, he will be thrown. The experienced horseman is never thrown even while distracted. Someone who has not mastered the mind training is like the inexperienced rider. If someone insults him, badmouths him and so on, when he is off his guard, he will at first get angry, and only after that will he recollect himself and pacify his anger. A person with a trained mind will not get angry when others strike or insult him, even when his mind is distracted. This is the criterion of having trained the mind. The criterion for having been trained is when you have reversed it. In other words, having a trained mind in the meditations on death and impermanence or on renunciation is the fact that you stop being preoccupied with the travail of this life or aspiring to the affluence of samsara. Similarly, you have mastered mind training if you have reversed your self-cherishing. You will have the five great signs of mastery. With familiarity, you will receive five signs with this type of mind training. You will be a great ascetic because you are able to be patient. Your mind will not tend to delusions, no matter what suffering, harm and so on may befall you. You will be a great personage because you cherish others more than yourself. You will be a great practitioner of virtue because in all your activities you never depart from the practices of the 10 types of dharmic behavior. You will be a great upholder of the Vinaya because you remain calm, composed and untarnished by the least sin or non-virtue. You will be a great yogi because you practice the real Mayana path. Reading from page 566, the 18 commitments of the mind training practice. always keep to three general points. The first of these is never to transgress the precepts of mind training. Do not use mind training as a pretext for ignoring the more basic vows, such as those in the Vinaya. The second is not to let your mind training become a mere travesty. Do not use mind training as a pretext for not refraining from upsetting creatures and humans by cutting down sacred trees and so on. Because you pretend to have no more self-cherishing, you must not let your behavior be a travesty. The third is not to let your mind training become partial. Do not be patient with friends and impatient with enemies, or tolerant of human while intolerant of creatures and so forth. Those are the three general precepts. Change your aspirations, but preserve your old manner. Do not leave the old, obstinate thoughts when you have in your mind stream the way they are. Employ some remedy to improve them a good deal. The best type of person sees improvement in a day, the medium in a month, and the most inferior in a year. You must see which of these you can imagine. If even this much is beyond you, then even though you have already received ordination and since become old, you will still have preserved the thoughts you had before when you were ordained. Do not be like the rocks behind your house. Change your aspirations. From anything to be transformed, there must be change into bodhicitta, renunciation, impermanence, and so on. But do not modify your external behavior at all. When I received a transmission on Bodhisattva's way of life from Kunalama Rinpoche, Rinpoche told me the story of a Lhasa market, and when person was going the circumambulation around the temple, and one people was meditating with posture, meditative posture, and asked him what you are doing. He says he is practicing tolerance. Then he says, you must eat shit. And he replied, you must eat it yourself. So this, when we are in a very comfortable or settled mind, then we appear as being very positive and very practical. But when the causes for or a problem arises, then we lose our normal and act very strange. Page 567. Do not mention others' withered limbs, that is, do not speak about others' defects. Do not think of others at all. That is, you should analyze your own faults and not look into the faults of others at all. Otherwise, you will only look for faults in your fellow practitioners, the members of your monastic college, or the monks in your house or at college, etc. You will then naturally find faults even in Buddhas. Do not attribute faults to others, for if you do, you will only ignore people, belittle them, and so on all the more. Purify the greatest delusion first. Purify whichever delusion in your mind stream is the largest. If your attachment is the largest, purify it by the application of antidote, such as meditation on ugly aspects of the body. Abandon all hopes of a result. When you do something virtuous, expect neither reward nor some favorable ripening of karma. Abandon food with poison in it. Do not cultivate any food of virtue that is mixed with the poison of self-cherishing. Should you develop a delusion, apply its antidote right away and do not allow it to persist. Treat it unfairly. The text talks about the four dharmas to be performed by practitioners for of virtue. For example, not repaying an evil action with an evil action. You are not a practitioner of virtue if you do not carry out these four, for you promised before your abbot and ordination master to practice them. If someone says to you, "You monkey, old dog," do not retaliate with, "You thief." If someone hits you once, do not hit him twice in return. Do not bide your time waiting to avenge some wrong if you had been waiting in ambush. Where the road runs through a gorge to harm that person in return. Foolish worldly-minded people think it is best to smile through secretly harboring resentment. This merely shows that dharma and worldly actions are opposites. Reading from page 569, the 22 pieces of advice. All yogas are practiced through the one. That is, the practitioner need not perform a variety of virtuous practices, because they are all included. Because they are all included within thoughts of interchanging self and others. When you eat, think, "I have already given my body to sentient beings. This in order to work for their sakes, I shall keep it nourished." And do the same thing with all your daily routine. Do everything in this way, reciting knowledge mantras, petitioning protector deities and the like. If the medicine is not proving beneficial, the doctor may both bleed the patient and perform a moxibustion. The thought of interchanging self and others will likewise serve in hundreds of cases, for it is an antidote to all illness and delusion. Set your motivation before all virtuous actions and follow them with a dedication. It is also most important to determine every morning what you will and you will not be doing. You must not give up your mind training practice, come what may, either happiness or sorrow. Some people drop the dharma when made happy by promotion or acquisition of wealth. Some give it up when they suffer from their enemies. But you must not give up your practice of mind training and either event. Safeguard the commitments of your mind training practice and those of your other practices in general, as you would value your life. There are three ascetic practices that you should know and devote yourself to. They are the asceticism of identifying delusions, that of applying antidotes, and that of breaking the continuity of the delusions. Reading from page 571. An illustration. Once a monk rejoiced when his rival broke a major vow. Kishipotova heard of this and heard of this and said, "The one who did the rejoicing committed a greater sin than the one who broke the vow." When we do things like study until our lama, we may develop a superficial renunciation and for a few days frantically practice virtue, practicing this and that and whatever. After a while, we get fed up and give virtue a wide berth. So do not be intermittent in your practice. As Geshe Kara Gomchung said, look far ahead, be far-sighted, and keep in tune. In other words, when you practice virtue, you should always maintain the right pitch, neither too intense nor too relaxed, so as to last. From the yoga of getting up each morning onward, you should practice the right amount, like later increase this and you will cover a wide range. This is like the story of the loose and the flea. The text says, train with determination. One interpretation of this is, devote your mind fully to this training. When a doctor lets blood, he cuts deep through blood vessels and skin together. In the same way, your mind training should wear down your mind stream as a rock will wear down a bone. Train yourself thoroughly through analytic meditation on mind training by means of both conceptualization and analysis. Apply the antidote to whichever delusion you deem greatest. Working for the sake of sentient being is only right and something you have already promised to do, so do not make a big deal of it to anyone. Suppose someone belittles you in front of others, do not get angry, and so on, that is, do not be spiteful. do not be as changeable as spring weather, changing from happiness to sadness for the slightest reason. Do not offer your health in the hope of receiving praise and so forth. This completes the advice. Reading from page 573, day 20. Khyabje Phabongka Rinpoche spoke a little in order to set our motivation. He quoted these lines from the summary of precious good qualities. The path of all victories once past, yet to come and present is that of the perfections and no other. That is, all the Buddhas of the three times have followed in each other's footsteps, never deviating from the text of six perfections. There is no other path in either sutra or tantra, and the texts like ours also teach this path. Then Rinpoche listed the headings we had before above, and beginning at the heading, teaching a practice to be applied in our whole life, he reviewed the material on how to convert unfavorable circumstances into the path to enlightenment. This completes the discussion on the way to develop the wish for complete enlightenment. Developing bodhicitta through the ritual of taking vows, I shall teach this section later, so we shall leave it for the time being. If you have no bodhicitta, no matter what meditations you do in the hope of achieving Buddhahood, be they on Ma Mudra or Dzogchen, the middle way or generation and the completion stages, etc., they will not get you one bit closer to Buddhahood. And as if this were not enough, you will not even enter the gateway to Mahayana. Thus everybody must concentrate on the practice of bodhicitta. The Buddhas have perceived things for many eons with the primal wisdom of their omniscience, but they have not seen any better method or any other gateway to the path. The activities to train in after developing bodhicitta. After having developed bodhicitta, you must train in certain activities. It is not sufficient merely to develop bodhicitta. Just as someone going to India will not get there unless they physically begin the journey, you also have to train in the deeds. You should gather both the merit and the primal wisdom times of collection in conjunction with each other in order to achieve both the physical and wisdom truth bodies of a victorious one. Your training, therefore, has to be a balance of both method and wisdom. The deeds of the children of the victors come down to two things, method and wisdom. The first five perfections come under method. The last perfection, which includes special insight, comes under wisdom. After developing bodhicitta, the way to train in the deeds of the children of the glorious ones. I will discuss this under two headings, how to train in the six perfections in order to ripen your own mind stream, and how to train in the four ways of gathering disciple in order to ripen the mind streams of other. The general way to train in the deeds of children of the victors, this is of six headings: generosity, ethics, patience, perseverance, concentration, wisdom. Reading from page 575. Generosity is by nature the thought wishing to give away one's body, possessions, and good virtues. It is classified into three types. This type of generosity ranges from giving a spoonful of barley flour to sacrificing one's life and body. If you cannot give something away, and according to Vinaya traditions, we have a saying that unless you're requested, you're not supposed to give teaching. So therefore, it is important that first someone requested a master to give the teaching. So therefore, without being requested, one is not allowed to give teaching. But in Christianity, we find some missionaries who purposely impart the teachings and the message of Jesus. And generally, it is saying that even if you are requested, you have to investigate and analyze further whether the student is capable of listening to those teachings or not, or whether the student has all the qualities needed in order listed in other texts. And once you are requested, you cannot jump into the conclusion out of joy and give the teaching. So the investigation process is paid great importance. And this is very good, I think. And today's a day when we are walking towards the religious harmony. And of course, the reason why we are making effort is not due to some creating a mutual happiness, but with the, using the name of religion, we kill each other. Even in Tibet, there are such kind of communal violences in Tibet. In Tibet, we have Muslims and Buddhists, but we have no issue of any conflict within the Muslim and Buddhists in Tibet. And in Ladakh also, you'll have neighbors, the Muslims and the Buddhists. And I remember that you have some conflicts with your neighbors. And I give a message at that time that you should live in harmony. And the Muslims of the Ladakh accept immediately, but the Buddhists do not listen immediately. And you took some time to listen to my advice. And I think for the Ladakh, it's all solved and not a big problem. But in Tibet, we often heard about the Sarah war and also the other such and such conflicts. And in the Western Kham regions, if there are the Gelug monasteries are bigger and have more power, then they harm the other traditions. And General Michi told me about one of those events. I think one Raja Gomba or something in Kham, and there is a small Kagyu monastery, and they got some patrons, and they built a roof with the golden roof, and monks from the Yeluk monastery went and destroyed that golden roof. And later, Rumichi is actually generally very interested for this. And Rumichi had a discussion with Kalu Rumichi, and Kalu Rumichi at that time said, yeah, that Sakya monastery was actually mine. So such kind of events and conflicts happen in our history and used to happen all the time. And we have in Abhidharma text, we have this reference with respect to the mind and the mental factors, where the discernment is paid more importance. And this is with respect to the five aggregates and why the first, the form and the emotions. And from the five aggregates, why the emotions and the discerning is kept aside from the other emotions. So even in Tibet, we have such many events with respect to the communal violence. And even in Ladakh, there are some disturbance with respect to different traditions. And I think so and so in other Himalayan regions. And all of these things are really something that we have to prevent at any cost. As for myself, whether it's a practitioner belonging to Islam, Christianity, or non-Buddhist, or any kind of sects or traditions, if we look from a positive side, they're all very good. They work for other people, providing service to other people. So if you look from the positive side, the lot of converging factors. And all their teachings and the practice are based on the practice of compassion and tolerance. So maybe in practical, individuals make a lot of mistakes sometimes, but from the religion or the tradition itself, they're very rich, especially based on compassion. And when I was giving a public talk in Australia, a presenter actually introduced me, and he's a very good practitioner of Christian, and he used to give a lot of food to the Amsikil and other poor people. And he introduced me and said that Dalai Lama is a good Christian practitioner. And I told him, and when it comes my turn, I thank him for the introduction, and I consider you as a good Buddhist. And there is a way to think about that, of course. Both sides, the both traditions are based on compassion, tolerance, and speaking about self-content and helping other people. And if you look from the positive or the converging factors, there are many practices that which can bring us together. Whether we want or not, whether we desire or not, there are, I think, about 100 million Christians, then about 6 million Muslims and Hindu and so on. And in China today, even in China, I think about there are 4 to 5 million of Buddhists in China. And I think if we count all the Thailand, Burma, etc., it will be around 10 million Buddhists all around the world. So the numbers of the other religions, and like Islam and Christianity, are enormous, and they will continue to live. And when we meditate and wish that all sentient beings, they become Buddha one day, and if you have a sense of feeling that may all sentient beings become a Buddhist one day, then that is not a good way to meditate. So whatever the aspirations or the prayers you did, but the Christians and the Islams will remain as themselves, and it is very difficult that they will convert to another religion. Of course, we have differences in terms of our philosophical views, but from the one's behavior or from the teachings, from non-view teachings, there are a lot of converging factors, teachings on compassion and tolerance and so on. Therefore, we have to live in harmony and be very friendly with each other. I'm speaking this from the depth of my heart, and when I say other to other people, so it's not about building a border between you and other. And also in this text, sometimes the issues are often being recited. Some issues coming with respect to different traditions in Tibet and their conflicts. And I think there is a purpose behind having so many different traditions. And otherwise, there is not much reason to feel that I'm Yeluk and I'm Sajja and I'm Kagyu and so on. And all this create a more kind of divide between the society, and it shows that your mentality is very small and your mentality is not extensive or wide, and you're not able to see the greater scope. You're only seeing a very small area. So therefore, it was in the Vinaya text that you're not allowed to give teaching unless you're requested. It's very good. So therefore, if all religions do the missionary works by forcefully imposing their teachings, then there will be a lot of problems. So therefore, Buddha's way of saying that one should not give teaching unless one is requested is very wonderful. And also, even you're requested, you have to investigate whether one is reliable a student or not. So now the tea blessing.
So in our treatises, we find one scholar criticizing another. By seeing this, we should not make ourselves distant from each other. But what we must do is try to see for what reason have such and such scholar for example, Shajja Chogden from the Sakya tradition have criticized Shajja Chogden and Korabjampa have criticized the Jerembuche's view of emptiness or middle way. And then between the Nyingmapas and Sarmapas, the new tradition translation and the old tradition lineages, if we say, oh, they who follow the Nyingma tradition smell of old, and those who follow the Sarma tradition smell of something new. And so there was a Geshe who actually had studied the Sankhya school of philosophy, one of the Hindu philosophies, philosophical schools. And therefore, he was quite adept at, because he became adept at holding the Sankhya view and debating on it too much, he got the name Sankhya. So if we have to, because of the differences in philosophical thinking, if we have to actually leave the rest of the schools aside and not really learn them, then in Bhavivekas, Tarkajwala and so forth, he has actually gone through the various non-Buddhist traditions. And so because of which, we would also have to leave them aside without doing studying them, but that's not how we should go about with it. And so we has... what we need to do is understand the positions, what kind of reasons they use to posit and assert their own traditions. And in this way, as I get Chöngyö Rinpoche Dorje's, what Chöngyö Rinpoche Dorje has said in his poetry on recognizing the mother, which is emptiness. He says, I do not mean to disrespect you, the followers of other Tibetan Buddhist traditions, and therefore we need to see what is the reason why such and such philosophical ideas were proposed and asserted by such and such schools. And it's we should not be boastful about our own traditions and saying that we have the reason, this and that reason, and disregard the others. This is important to keep in mind, to respect other traditions as well. And so being generous with the Dharma, this form of generosity could even be teaching a single four-line verse of Dharma to someone who wishes to listen. If done with that person's benefit, if done with this person's benefit in mind, so in the Tibetan tradition, some people consider that when someone or someone who has the title of a lama comes with pomp and grace, then they are revered and respected. But when they hear, oh, some geshe is coming, because there is no such pomp and grace, they really neglect or leave and be indifferent to these geshes. And once there was someone who gave a kanju transmission, and people around the village heard about this, and they came to listen to the Kanjur transmission. And when they reached the place where this was being given, and then they asked who was giving, and who was giving this. And the people in the area said, one lama in Amdur dialect, Alak, is giving this, and he didn't have any special title of a lama or anything. And then these people from the other the neighboring village went back. And so this is how we, what we have been doing in Tibetan. And so this is a drawback in our society, Tibetan community. So even tutoring our people, our peoples in this textbook, in their textbooks, in being generous with the Dharma, to do this, you need to not be called a lama. So regarding this, and today give discourses from the heights of the meditation throne. And so in Zabedur Rinpoche mentions in his words of my perfect teacher that the greatness of a lama in Kham area, Kham region of Tibet, is measured by the number of horses and so forth in the caravan. And so one time, because Dabidur Rinpoche was receiving many of his disciples who came to see him in his hermitage, then one day he just left the place, carrying with him only his own few items. And then on the way somewhere, he found a host to stay, and the house mother of the house thought that he was some traveler, and then she actually asked her to do, kept him as her servant, carrying water and so forth, fetching water for her and cleaning the house and so forth. And then Dabidur Rinpoche's disciples suspected that he had been in certain direction, and they came in that direction. And on their way, they found this house, and they asked if such and such Lama had come here. And the family said that no, not a Lama, but one traveler came here. And then the disciples asked, how does he look? And then as the mother of the house described the person, then those disciples came to know that it was the Lama that they had come in search for. And at that point, actually, the house mother had sent Dabidur Rinpoche to clear her chamber pot. And then since she came to realize that was the Lama they had come to look for, and they were searching for, she felt embarrassed and ran away from her house. And these days, there are many false lamas who abuse others with money and taking money and having sex with women and so forth. And so there are these people from Tibet. And I always tell this story. Many years ago, one Chinese Buddhist came to see me and told me that there are more, the increasing number of Chinese taking interest in Buddhism and Dharma, and there are many Tibetans who come to China proper, saying that they were lamas. And as the Chinese disciples devoted to him, to them, and as time went by, what they found was that these lamas, the so-called lamas, had actually come to China proper seeking money and women. And so he asked me to do something about it. And I told him, I'm from India, I'm in India, and I can't do much from here. And so you, the Chinese students, should first learn the qualities, what qualities a spiritual Lama has to have. And then, having learned those qualities, about those qualities, then you should check whether the people who come to you actually fulfill them or not. Some may qualify the criteria of being learned, but then you still have to check whether they actually are keeping the words that they give to the disciples. And so in this way, I mean, whether you have to check the reliability of the person, not just because they are learned, but also from their practice. And so in this way, you have to check. And so there are many Chinese people who have come here from mainland China, and there are also Tibetans who have come here. At this time, the value of the Nalanda tradition is increasing. People value it more and more, and therefore we should make sure that it does not diminish, and we should not cause any harm to this. And as Jism Melarepa had said, when I had not seen you, And so Jajimila Rinpoche was told by someone that, "Oh, I have heard your fame from afar, but when I see you near and close to me, you are just a mendicant singer. And so when you are afar, you go to some place to study. And so everyone has the responsibility to be careful not to cause disappointment in the minds of these devotees. And so even tutoring your pupils in their textbooks is meaning being generous with the Dharma. And generosity with the Dharma is better than the other forms of generosity, because you're opening the wisdom eye or the eye of intelligence within these disciples and see what they actually need. And when they are able to understand and see the meaning of the Dharma and apply them within themselves, then that serves the purpose of listening to the teachings. Also, your memorization, recitation, and study of the text will become an act of generosity with the Dharma if you imagine yourself to be surrounded by gods who uphold virtue, by all sentient beings who are listening in. And with regards to Sthiramati, who was the disciple of Vasubandhu, when he was listening to Vasubandhu, there was a pigeon who always heard the teaching and which left an imprint in its mind. And then that pigeon became Sthiramati, and Sthiramati became the disciple of Vasubandhu who exalted in Abhidharma than his teacher. What more need is to say? Need I say about this, except that when earthworm, etc., hear the words of Dharma, it puts virtues imprint in their mind streams. Think in this way, even when just performing a reading in a home of your benefactor, you have to be particularly careful when you go into the village to perform a ritual. Our compassionate teacher taught the secret answers as a means of gaining enlightenment in one rebirth. So if you exchange this for gifts received for performing these rituals, you have sold the Dharma for material goods. This is like digging a king off his throne and forcing him to sweep the floors. So these rituals will be right motives. So His Holiness was commenting that, and the crux of the matter is to be always of altruistic towards other people and do whatever you can, giving advice and suggestions sincerely. So being generous with the Dharma does not mean teaching it formally. It also means using your conversation and so forth as a direct or indirect means of leading others to the Dharma. Those who are audience should practice generosity mainly by giving Dharma, but they ought also to be generous with material goods. If this is not too much trouble, however, the Kadamba Geshe Sharava once said to a group of the audience, "I am not going to speak about the benefits of giving things away, for I have already told you the drawbacks of grasping, the generosity of others' fearlessness." Giving others fearlessness. This could be, for example, liberating prisoners from jail or rescuing the drowning. Even saving creatures such as earthworm from heat in summer or cold in the winter is a form of this type of generosity. You do not have to go far to practice this generosity of bestowing fearlessness. You can do it with lies on your body. Saving insects from drowning, for example, is very easy to do. It only involves moving one of your hands. The engaging in the deeds of bodhisattvas tell us fundamentally the perfection of generosity is. If the perfection of generosity were ridding all beings of poverty, how would the previous protectors of Buddhas have perfected it? Since even now the poor exists, in other words, university cannot be merely reading sentient beings of poverty, nor can it be freedom from miserliness, since Shravakas, particular Buddhas, and our hearts have this. And engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattvas say, they say the perfection of generosity is the state of mind that gives to all beings all your possessions and all your karmic fruits. Just thus, generosity must be mental. And so you have to think about the pros and cons of this kind of practice of giving. And so there are things that should not be given away. Do not practice generosity with certain exceptional things as is allowed on account of recipient, the time, the thing being given, etc. If the giver is odent, he should not give. They should not give away their three types of robes, etc. Nor should the odent be offered food in the afternoon. You should not give unclean foods such as garlic or an onion to people like Brahmins who are bound by caste rules of cleanliness. And then giving scripture regarding that, there was once a person in certain publication of the series of Dalai Lamas, past Dalai Lamas. At that time, I had a discussion with this one official of the Tibetan government. So he told me that it's not good to include that. He suggested that to not include how the previous Dalai Lamas were offered all kinds of material things by the Chinese emperors. And so I told him the original block print is in Tibet, so we cannot just cover this up. And we should publish these books, and then listen to what criticisms people actually give. And many of these criticisms, and many times, as it happens without the daybreak of the before the start of the daybreak of the opponent, some people and some criticisms of the sun rise. And so, without really understanding what position the other people have. And so, for example, from Tibet, there is publication by Tsawa Danyuk and Shogdung, who have criticized the Buddha Dharma, and we should, I think that these are good to point out our mistakes. And if they are wrong in their criticism, we should respond to them with reason. So today, even scientists who have no faith in religion, we are not talking about with them. We are not talking about past, future lives, or liberation and so forth. But when it comes to explaining many of the things about emotions and so forth, they also accept them. And so with regard to the Buddha Dharma, the practice of Dharma has to be based on philosophical concepts and understandings. And so when it comes to these philosophical understandings and concepts, it's very difficult to outdo them as the explanations that we have. So from the point of view of the Madhyamakas who do not assert any objective existence, We can see how they could outdo the Savatantrika Madhyamakas and so forth through reason, and therefore the great masters of India from the Nalanda tradition, for example, the 17 Nalanda masters of whom I have written the praise. And we should use their writings as our textbooks for study of the Dharma. Therefore, there is no reason that we should feel low in spirit when it comes to... And so here what it says is that you should not give scriptures to those who would try to find criticisms. And so we should not be fearful of that. So if the giver... nor should the odent be offered food in the afternoon. You should not give unclean food such as garlic and so forth, and you should not give away anything putrefying or give books to scriptures to people who merely want to create controversy or... So that was the... phrase His Holiness was commenting on, give poison or weapons to suicidal people. And so when it comes to practicing giving, and one gives, practices generosity, and when there is a point, at some point you may find it's improper to give, you should protect the giving. And then when you give, there is the practice of purifying and purification and also increasing the offerings. So you should teach the sacred tantra to, or should not teach the sacred tantra to an unfit or shield a criminal from the law if you can sure. You can be sure he will... harm either sentient beings or the teachings and so on. It is wrong. It is a wrong way to think. An act of generosity is without results. It is also of little benefit to support one sentient being and ignore the needs of many others. Train yourself to be unsullied by the above things as well as by the following. Having wrong views that lead you, for example, to sacrifice cattle, belittle others, act competitively, have an inflated opinion of yourself, wish for fame, feel regret and defeatist, or act... be defeatist or act in a partisan manner. Chandideva's Compendium of Instructions. Compendium of Practice speaks of three things, giving protection and keeping pure. In other words, you increase your thoughts of giving your body. But until the time is ripe, you should protect your body from harmful conditions and keep the body pure by not using it unvirtuously. The text also discusses the fourth. You should accomplish courses with this present body so that your next rebirth will have the eight qualities that results from karmic ripening, that is increasing. Now, there is another group of four with respect to possessions, giving away your possessions and increasing your thoughts of giving, protecting them until you encounter a karmically potent recipient, and keeping your wealth pure by not letting it be sullied by wrong livelihood or sin, increasing the extent of your giving so that you will have possessions to give away in your next rebirth. Another group of four is discussed, giving away your virtue to sentient beings from the depths of your heart, protecting your virtue from being destroyed by anger, keeping the purity of being unsullied by impure motives such as yearning for happiness. So with regard to the three vows of Pratimoksha, Bodhisattva, and the Tantric vows, there are different interpretations of saying that whether they are of one essence or nature. And so Rinzin Thenpa would use this idea to say that those who uphold the tradition of Lama Tsongkhapa are of the ones who protect or preserve this pure tradition with the threefold vows being of one entity or nature. Such as the yearning for happiness of this life, or merely wanting to prevent your birth in the lower realms, increasing your sense of rejoicing, and so on. In fact, the text discusses four groups of four. You must train in the way set out in this text. And the practice of regarding the practice of perfection of ethics, as it says in engaging in the bodhisattva deeds, they say the perfection of ethics is to gain the abandonment of a certain thoughts, that is, you reverse thoughts of harming others, along with the basis of such thoughts, turning them into the thought of abandoning these actions. Complete familiarity with this abandonment becomes the perfection of ethics. There are three types of ethics. The ethics are refraining from misdeeds. And as an example of this, the three types of vows. The lamp for the path says, those who hold one of the seven Pratimoksha vows may also hold another vow. They have the good fortune to receive Bodhisattva vows. Others do not. At first sight, this seems to be saying that you must have the ethics of Pratimoksha vows in order to be a candidate for the Bodhisattva vows. But it also means, in the tantric context, that the best candidates for practicing the secret tantras and are monks and nuns. Although this might also be interpreted as saying the monks and nuns are the best candidates to follow the trainings of Bodhisattvas, this does not cover all cases. There are gods and nagas who are suitable candidates for the Bodhisattva trainings. And the comment His Holiness made was about anger. And so, with regard to the people or beings to whom you may become angry, there could be bodhisattvas as well. So, as it is said in Bodhisattva Charyavatara, it's very difficult once you are in the full heat of the anger, but when... At the causal level, before the anger can arise in you, it is important at that point to show restraint and use antidotes to stop anger. And so the other two types of ethics is ethics gathering virtuous dharma and the ethics working for the sake of sentient beings. And the next section is how to train in patience. And so patience is by nature the mind being undisturbed by any harm that is inflicted or being undisturbed by suffering. It says engaging in the bodhisattva deeds, unruly sentient beings cannot all be subdued. And they are as vast as space. If you defeat this angry mind, it is the same as defeating them all. In other words, anger is what should be defeated. Anger, if not defeated, is most dangerous and heavy. As Chandideva says, there is no sin like hostility. There is no austerity like patience. There are three types of patience. The patience of remaining calm in the face of your attackers, and the patience of accepting suffering, and the patience to gain assurance in the Dharma. When others, such as your enemies, harm you, be patient and do not get angry. Be aware of the drawbacks of anger, for it is the worst of all the non-virtues. It is said that each time you get angry, you destroy the root virtues of 1,000 eons. When we come to understand the damage wrought by anger, we will always want to persevere with the meditation on patience. You cannot know who is a bodhisattva. If you get angry with someone who is a bodhisattva and your bodhicitta is weaker than his or theirs, you destroy the virtue of 100 eons. If you yourself are not a bodhisattva and the person you are angry with is, you destroy the virtue of 1,000 eons. This is mentioned in engaging the middle way and engaging in the bodhisattva deeds. Thus, the drawbacks are heavy indeed. You must cultivate patience, but do this before you get angry. Once you are angry, it is too late. You must be patient and think about the drawbacks of anger. If you do not, you will make everyone, including yourself, unhappy. Aside from anything else, anger can even drive you to suicide and so on. Anger results in your having many enemies. You might feel all this may be true, but how can I be patient when there are so many potential objects of anger? In engaging in the bodhisattva deeds says, how could I find enough leather to cover the earth? Having leather to the, on the soles of your sandals is the same as covering the whole earth. Check whether or not you could ever completely subdue your enemies. You will find that you would never run out of the enemies or subdue them all before the time came when there were no sentient beings left. But if you subdue your anger, you will not have a single enemy, and it will be the same as subduing your all your enemies. Once you thoroughly understand how the types of patience are classified by their nature, plus the drawbacks of anger and so forth, will you ever again let your whole body be possessed by anger? Once a lama tried to separate his disciple and a thief in a fight. He did not succeed, and the disciple was hitting the man. The lama put his finger in on his disciple's nose and said, "Patience, patience." Immediately, the disciple recalled his lost patience. What use is it to pretend to be patient if you are angry? If your anger has already done its work, it will be difficult at first to be patient. It will be, become easy if you familiarize yourself through mind training. There are reasons why it is not right to get angry with someone who does not harm. Suppose a man hits you on the head with a club. Think as follows to stop yourself becoming angry. If I must be angry with a thing that actually causes the pain, I should be angry with the club. But the club itself is powerless. It is being used. The man hitting you is powerless too. He is being forced to do this by the delusions in his mind stream. It profits you little to be angry with them. So it is wrong to be angry. It all comes down to one thing. The wrong way you behave is the most immediate causal factor for your being hit with the club. The root, however, is the evil karma you acquired through hurting people in the past and so forth. So, since this resulted from the ripening of your own actions through cause and effect, with whom should you be angry? The 400 verses says, the sage sees the delusions, not the person with the delusions. In other words, a mad patient may hit the doctor, or a mad son hit his father, but the doctor and the father do not get angry with either the patient or the son. They work hard to cure them of their madness. People who do not harm are likewise made mad by delusions. They are not free agents, and you should not get angry with them. Instead, you must try some means to rid them of their delusions. If fire burns your hands, it is your own fault for having touched it. It is not. It would not be right to be to get angry with the fire. Likewise, it is your own fault for provoking the other person, and it is not right to be angry with him. Since sentient beings were deluded by nature, it is wrong to be angered by them, just as it is wrong to get angry with the fire when you are burnt. For the nature of fire is to heat. To burn. to hear and burn. Still, you may feel such may be their nature, but I became angry with them because they did something to me unexpectedly. If that were so, it would be right to get angry with the sky when hailstones come, but this is pointless. Thus, it is wrong to be angry with such people when you are struck, insulted, or so on, and so on. The suffer mental and physical discomfort as a result. Do not return the wrong, thus creating causes for being reborn in the lower realms. Apply antidotes to your anger instead and be patient. As it is said in the engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds, if at present I cannot tolerate even this much suffering, since anger is the cause of suffering in hell, why not stop being angry? The patience of remaining calm in the face of your attackers is something you cultivate toward those who would do you harm, not those who would help you. The more people there are who would harm you, the more opportunity you have to practice patience. So you must think that these people are an aid to increase your patience. Atisha always used to be accompanied by King Asangavyas jester, a difficult fellow to get along with. When Atisha was asked to get rid of him, he replied, "With him around, my patience has a chance to fully develop its qualities." In short, if even the Shravakas who work for their own sake do not get angry in the face of adversaries, how much more must it apply to me, someone who claims to be a Mahayanist? You must study the story of Rishi Shantivadin. And then the next, the patience of accepting suffering. Not only should you be unattached to happiness, but you should also regard suffering as a form of adornment and use it as a medicine. As in the preceding section on the mind training practices, whenever you are beset by suffering while enduring ascetic practices for the sake of Dharma, when sick, when beset by unasked for enemies, and even when suffering in a nightmare, turn them all into things that will help you your Dharma practice. Think about how they will use up your evil karmas, increase thereby your love and compassion for others. Think about the faults of samsara and so on. Be patient. When you experience suffering, think, this replaces the suffering that I would otherwise have experienced in the lower realms. This ought to make you happy. Suppose a man who was to be executed had his hand amputated instead. He would rightly feel happy about his escape. Also, one can put up with the suffering of being bled or having a moxibustion in order to pacify the suffering of an illness. So, when you undergo difficulties for the sake of Dharma, like, I think, good, this replaces my suffering in the lower realms. At such a time, recall the good qualities of suffering. Engaging in the deeds of Bodhisattvas tells us the good quality of suffering is that it removes arrogance through sorrow. One develops compassion for beings in samsara, avoids sins, and rejoices in virtue. Furthermore, you must accept suffering and cultivate a state in which you will increase your wholesome activities. Do things like practicing contentment and having few wants, thing while carrying on such practices as of asceticism. Because I've been ordained, I should not expect anything better than an inferior place to stay, inferior clothes, and so on. How fortunate I am to train myself in the four things suited to the Aryas, such as being content with the bare necessities, robes, arms, bed, and so on. If you do not do this, you will desire better food, more wealth, and etc., and will always be looking for ways to increase your possessions. You will not think about Dharma. You will not transcend the meaninglessness of human life. Once a timber merchant had a teacher say, after buried treasure is discovered, a poison quickly pervades it. The poison is potent.
Later, the merchant located some treasure he had been seeking and became a rich man. The king asked him to give the course for his wealth. The merchant lied, and the king knew it. Just before being executed, the merchant said it was quickly pervaded by poison. That poison was potent. When he said this, he was asked again for the reason, and so told his story. Wealth is just such a poison. If even we simple monks have few wants and are content, conditions will be favorable for us. When Jerembuche left for Jadil, to live as a hermit, he and his disciples had only 8 shō between the 9 of them. Shō is kind of a coin or money, but their wants were few, and they were content. They were content. Their clothes were not too bad, and they were content with whatever happened. Their food, clothes, and so on did not harm their practice. Similarly, you should enjoy and be satisfied with your possessions, for you acquired them through your merit. Be patient if something unpleasant, such as others criticizing you, happens. Accept suffering in your normal activities, such as the asceticism of holding an erect posture, etc. Accept the suffering that go with upholding the Dharma, making offerings to the teachers, etc. Accept the suffering that goes with your livelihood. Do without sensual pleasures, abandon ostentatious desirables, and make do with whatever you already have. Even though you may look ugly and your clothing be of poor quality, etc. Accept the suffering of practicing virtue till you are worn out. Accept the suffering of working for the sake of sentient beings, such as having patience, although you know you will have to suffer in preventing someone from being killed, etc. And accept the suffering that go with living hand-to-mouth after abandoning the means of increasing your wealth though commerce, farming, etc., and so on. Thus, the patience of accepting suffering is a vast subject. And next, the patience to gain assurance of Dharma. The swift path, Lamrim, talks about this in detail. You gain assurance in the Dharma by meditating on the key points of practice to perform virtue, learning how to modify your behavior by memorizing and reciting texts, and analyzing the significance of good qualities of the three jewels, the meaning of your goal of enlightenment, the path leading to that goal, what is meant by selflessness, and what the profound and extensive baskets of the teaching mean. Or, in this context, you could do this by becoming sure of the meaning of the words in this Lamrim, for example. This type of patience resembles the comprehension acquired by logicians from their debates. The first of these three forms of patience is to be exercised when you are provoked by your adversaries. The other two are to be practiced all the time. You should be patient during the teachings, no matter how long they may go on for, and so forth. Listen single-pointedly, think over the meaning, be careful about your behavior while attending debate sessions or assembly, endure the hungry and thirst. Endure hunger and thirst. Let your mind be single-pointed when you memorize or recite texts. The last two of the types of the last two types of patience always apply, even when you are going off to a village to do a ritual in someone's house. And then the next section is the perseverance. What is perseverance? Gladness in virtue. Perseverance by nature is by nature gladness for performing virtue. It is the best means of carrying a virtue through to completion. An ornament to the sutras tell us, perseverance is the best among the whole range of virtue. When you cultivate it, you will later succeed. Through perseverance, you will soon reach the best of the happy states and have both worldly and transworldly psychic powers. Through perseverance, you'll obtain your mundane aims. Through perseverance, you'll come to be pure. Through perseverance, you will be freed and transcend your views of equating self with the perishable. Through perseverance, you'll gain supremely enlightened Buddhahood. Thus, this text says that perseverance is the best of all virtues. Everything up to Buddhahood derives from it. Engaging in the middle way says, every good quality follows from perseverance. Thus, do not behave like a stubborn donkey digging in its heel. When you should be doing your recitations, etc., commence these activities by taking great delight in performing virtue. Accustom yourself to do only a little in the early stages. Increase this as your perseverance increases. There are three types of laziness that hinder perseverance. So Gungdangpa says that do not go after the branches while abandoning the root. His Holiness is going to stop. So cultivating the actual cultivation of quiescence on page 959. So we have finished up to page 598. Completely abandoned conceptual thoughts such as desire. Adorned with Mount Meru, the four continents, and the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it to you. May all sentient beings enjoy the pure land. For a great length of time, may I become the chief leading Buddha of all the Buddha's mind. Wisdom is blinded by ignorance. Even if I do not reach this state, may I be held in your loving compassion for all lives. May I find the best of completed parts of the teaching, and may I please all the Buddhas by my practice, using skillful means drawn by the strong force of compassion. May I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings to the point of the path as I have discerned them. May I hold Buddha's teaching for a very long time, with my heart going out with great compassion in whatever direction the most precious teachings have not yet spread, or once spread have declined. May I reveal this treasure of happiness and aid. May the minds of those who wish for liberation be granted bounteous peace, and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time. Even this great path of enlightenment completed due to the wondrous conduct of the Buddhas and their children. May all human and non-human beings who eliminate adversity and create conducive conditions for practicing the excellent path never be parted in any of their lives from the purest path praised by the Buddhas. Whenever someone makes efforts to act in accordance with the tenfold Mayana virtuous practices, may they always be assisted by the mighty ones, and may oceans of prosperity spread everywhere. May the operation of the evil thoughts and deeds of negative forces of humans and non-humans who harbor malice through their perverted prayers against the teaching of the victorious ones be totally vanquished through the power of the truth of the three jewels.